I'm Robert Sickles, and I'm here with Kinda Kiefel, and this is the cold open number 49, the Summer Auteur Face-Off Edition.
Yes.
And we are here to talk about what everybody is seemingly talking about, which is Greta Gerwig's Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer and our responses to them. And we have decided to go from dark to light. So we're going to start with Oppenheimer, although there's quite a bit of light, I guess, in part of Oppenheimer as well. Overwhelming light. Okay, Kinda, so start us off and tell us what you thought about Oppenheimer, and we'll see where the conversation takes us.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited to talk about both these movies with you. I can't wait to hear what you thought. I thought Oppenheimer was a true piece of art. I thought it was a beautiful composition, and the sound design. Once again, Nolan has such a great team, such a great vision. What I really appreciated almost immediately about Oppenheimer was the sort of music of the spheres visuals was so not heavy-handed. It could have, I feel like that's been done to lesser effect. And I thought he placed everything so artfully and just gave us enough of everything. And I also was so impressed the way once we watched the explosion, spoiler alert, about two-thirds of the way through it, hour two, that the momentum, the sort of train goes off the tracks, and the way it's edited, it really made my heart beat faster. It's so stunningly paced, and the way it just starts, it kicks off, and it's this sort of composed pace, and then once the experiment has blown, then it really rides off the rails. It has this feeling of the train going faster and faster, with all of the way that the sound and the editing moves. And I just thought that was a real triumph for Nolan. How about you? What was your take?
Sure. I am not saying this as like a hot take.
Sure.
I didn't like it.
Okay.
And it fair puts enough. Me... I'm the anomaly here. I understand this. Like, most people really liked it. And, you know, I should preface this by saying I'm not crazy about Christopher Nolan movies to begin with. I don't care for Inception. I didn't love Tenet.
I hated Tenet.
Yeah, I didn't love Interstellar. I probably like Dunkirk and Dark Knight. And I like Memento. Mm-hmm. And the one he did with Al Pacino, I forget, Insomnia.
Yes.
I like parts of it. But yes. I feel like, for me, his structure gets in the way of the storytelling. And okay. I thought that was really pronounced in this film. It was, for me, too clever by half. It did not need to be structured the way that it was. So to start and end with this trial kind of, it didn't seem necessary to me. And it kind of took me out of the story. And the middle part of the film where they're at Los Alamos and they're building towards Trinity, mm-hmm. I thought was the Trinity test.
Yeah.
I thought it was exceptional. Like, it was exceptional, edge of my seat, like,
yes.
Amazing filmmaking. And it was kind of thrilling. And
it was
kind of emotional and overwhelming and powerful when the bomb went off, which sounds like I love the movie, right?
Right. You liked that part.
I love that part. And, like, to be fair, that's a third of the movie. It's a lot of the movie. But I didn't like anything that came after that. I thought the trial was a mess. The way that they did it, I understand its importance, but I actually thought it would have been, for me, a more effective movie if they just told the story of the Trinity test and had like a title card postscript that just said he was denied his security clearance.
Yeah, or that's interesting.
If it was significantly shorter. Now, it's kind of strange because I thought the performances were uniformly just amazing.
Yes.
They were amazing, but I just didn't think it was a very good script.
Fair enough. I could understand that. No, I hear what you're saying, and I don't know if it would strengthen anything. I don't. Have you read American Prometheus and the back story and the expanded story of what Nolan is attempting to write? Because it's almost totally based on that book, from what I understand. Can I ask you, do you think he was too bound to the source material in this case? Because I feel like he's used to driving the bus, the Christopher Nolan bus. And to me, I found it interesting because as much as I loved it, I'll be honest, I got a little bored before the explosion. Yes. I got a little lost in the mud and the weeds of exactly what you're saying, the trial. It takes a little bit for me to be stoked about a trial, if I can lay that out as far as what I enjoy. And I was a little bit let down to see the focus being on Strauss and all of that drama. Because I agree with you. I think that's interesting. And what would that have looked like if it had just been a straight across Oppenheimer bio? I would have liked that better, I think, too. It's a lot of sort of fancy layering that, to me, it was so many names too that I did feel like I could feel him being a little bit gummed up by being beholden to the book, in my opinion. But I did think it was artful as far as his choices, in particular the way that Cillian Murphy, am I pronouncing that right, Cillian?
I believe so, yeah.
The way that we see him burdened, I feel like that is a visual story that we don't always see as far as the bomb makers of the world, and that we can be told that there was guilt carried for, you know, the godfathers of these weapons of mass destruction. But I felt like the way we saw him haunted was very beautifully acted, like you pointed out. Great acting. You're absolutely right. And by Robert Downey Jr. too. He looks sort of ready to chew up the scenery after being, you know, Iron Man for so long. And I thought that was a triumph in itself, that he was just having a great time with being someone else.
It's not like he didn't chew up the scenery as Tony Stark, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah, no. But in a different way, I think he's just like, he jumped right in a beautiful way in this role too.
Everybody was really good in it.
They were.
And his movies leave me cold. I don't think that he does things well with relationships. I just don't think that he does, even like the Rachel problem in the Batman movies with the two different actresses play her. Like, it's just, it's not believable. And I think that was a huge flaw in this film. I thought Florence Pugh was criminally underused.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of defense for why this is not exploitive. And it's like, I'm sorry, but she was naked in the entire film. And I don't know anything about her.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Apparently she was a psychologist or studying psychology. And I only learned this after the movie. But to have sex and get him to quote
the
Sanskrit.
World. I love that. That was kind of awesome.
I laughed out loud.
Did you?
I thought it was so silly.
Unbelievable.
So silly. We're supposed to believe that she was somehow important to him and played a role. And I don't know anything. I don't know anything about her. And like, I think the shorthand is she's Florence Pugh and she looks good naked, so therefore
she's incandescent,
she matters. And I just, so I would have preferred that that character wasn't in the film than the way that it is now. And I don't think that I'm a person, I don't have to have representation in every film or anything like that. If
you
just would have wanted to make this about Oppenheimer and tell that story without these details, I would have been fine with that. I wouldn't have missed her.
Right.
I think even more disturbing for me was Emily Blunt's character in this as Kitty Oppenheimer, because all I knew about her is that she's a day drunk.
Right.
It's literally like...
And then it's fine, which I guess I was even more frustrated with her lack of a sort of narrative detail, because then they're this like powerful sort of like there's this camaraderie with them at the end, the way she kind of puts the lawyers in their place, which is a great scene and badass, but why is she so together now? We don't have any in between where we understand that she's what, healed from her mental illness or her day drinking or what have you. But it's, there was a lot of like skipping over what, you're right, what are sort of personal, gripping details that Nolan does not do that well. You're absolutely right. He always has this sort of like mysterious, tragic woman, I feel like. I feel like Inception has its own version of that, but it's always at an arm's length, a little bit of a distance, right? But this shorthand for that is that Florence takes her own life, but which is crushing, but we need to care about some of this a little more, the way we see that he cares. And yeah, you're right. I think that could have either been fleshed out or not at all, because I feel like it's alluded to that he is some sort of womanizer, but we really only see two women with like a third sort of at a distance also, which is that interesting. Yeah, which I guess I want a lean in or a leave alone, right? As far as that he was a tough one too, because apparently quite a lot was skirted over as far as just what I was reading about sort of comparisons to the book, because now I'm interested in that book and we've ordered it, but I haven't read anything yet. But what is also not clear as far as the way the story is told, which I actually think sort of affects certain things, is that he grew up quite wealthy and quite privileged. And I just think that's kind of an interesting detail as well. But there are a few things literally about him that we just don't see. And I don't know, I think you're right. Had it been the removal of the trial, maybe then we get a little bit more of that Oppenheimer narrative arc and goodness that seemed to be missing a little bit. But yeah, I'm trying to think of another detail that I feel like the way that the flashbacks were used were quite interesting. I like that we see visuals, just speaking of the shorthand of, you know, the tragedy of suicide. I kind of think it's interesting the way that Christopher Nolan gives us a visual flashback before we understand what it is. And I feel like he did that a few times. And I thought that was interesting filmmaking. There were some choices there that he just did visually and with sound that's sort of outside of the story really got me. It was kind of a just emotional, interesting visual storytelling. So
and I loved the sound design was amazing.
Incredible.
It was absolutely amazing. And yes. I want to go back to what you said about Emily Blunt's character.
Please.
Kitty at the trial. She was dynamite.
She was awesome.
It's like it, but it frustrated me because it's like you have this dynamite actor who's just a fireball that can deliver these kinds of scenes who you've done nothing with for 2 hours and 40 minutes prior to this point. And so for me, it wasn't like a clarifying, oh, this is Kitty moment. It was like, oh, what a missed opportunity to have this forceful character in this film. And maybe she wasn't forceful in his life, but I don't know enough about her based on the way she's presented in this film. And, you know, people have said, and I don't think it's inaccurate, that Nolan has a woman problem, but I would also say it's a character problem. There's just too many characters in
there
this.
There really are. It's a huge, crazy cast that we are supposed to keep track
of. And a lot of them, whether it's Teller or Fermi, et cetera, like these are people who are Heisenberg, right? People who are famous in and of their own right. So I feel like there's almost a name-checking quality. They have to be included. They have to be a part of it, even though maybe the most important one was the David Krumholtz character, Isidore Rabi. But there's Jason Clarke's character, like the Roger Robb, who I have no, who the fuck is Roger Robb and
truly,
what he do? Like apparently an important historical figure, but like I felt like maybe the most well-developed character in this whole film was actually Strauss. Like
For sure. By far, right? Which is odd.
That's a problem.
Yes, it's a real problem. I couldn't agree more. That's where I felt like some sort of the bindings to the book, that's the name listing, the name dropping, that's when it started to feel like, oh, this is him trying to like do homework. You know, it felt like a sort of like drowning in archives moment, which isn't interesting to listen to or watch as much as it is focusing on these key people, right? That are these framers of this obvious destructive historical thing. But I agree, and that I think that's where I kind of got a little bit sleepy and mudded up is when I usually love the moment in a movie where they're assembling the team. Like, that's like one of my favorite things in any story. And so there, I was surprised at how much less interesting for me it was than usual. It's like, oh yeah, we're getting the team together, but this team was so huge and everyone was like almost de-characterized, and so that was a little frustrating. I'm with you on the glut. So
quite like Matt Damon. He's just so reliable
whatever
he does. He just is always like, it's such an engaging performance, and he played the soon-to-be general, right?
Yes.
Really well in there, and like, it's visually beautiful. It looks great in the desert. I don't think, like, I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I saw it, mm-hmm. but I was frustrated. And again, I know that I'm in the minority here, but I think there's a masterpiece in there.
I do too.
Although maybe not, because those performances aren't there, right? I don't know. Even if you cut things out to make it a little more brisk, I did feel every second of its length. I thought it was, and I'm not the kind of person that in and of itself, it's just like, we shouldn't have 3-hour movies, even though we have way too many.
So many.
Near 3-hour movies. Most of them don't justify that runtime.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's a performance that didn't make it to the final cut that somehow would have made it better. I want to go back, Kinda, to you talking about the book, which I didn't read, but you know, the conversation that he had with Albert Einstein didn't happen. Like, it's complete fiction.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
I didn't know
either. Well, that's a bummer. Okay, because
but it's the most kind of important, like, it's the stinger, right?
It is. It's the thing. Yes.
The film.
It is.
And I'm fine with that. Like, I don't care.
I'm glad it was there. Yeah. I mean, it was a good weighty device that had a payoff to it, which not everything did in the movie. Oh goodness, that's really interesting, actually, because I really felt like Einstein's just mere presence did a lot of heavy lifting for me,
right?
Spiritually.
Sure. Yeah. You see, you know, his response to what was, I won't spoil it, but his response to what was said, like, it's key.
It's key.
So I can't decide whether I think it's a Is it a bad movie with great scenes, or is it a great movie with bad scenes?
Like, sure, some extra fat. Maybe.
Don't know. I don't regret having seen it. And as I said, this really is an auteur battle.
Yes.
And I love that it's not IP-based. I love that he was moved by this. Apparently he believes that Oppenheimer is maybe the most important person that ever lived, which is kind of crazy.
Yes.
There is no case made in the film for me
to believe that, but
fair enough.
Yeah. He's an interesting character.
He is.
And a complex historical figure, which we want to know about our figures, right? That they had inner lives, and that our geniuses aren't just alone in a tower, that they had messiness and they had love, and that they were haunted. Like, I love all of that. That's interesting. And I see, in a way, how Oppenheimer is the perfect Nolan character, even though he is unique in that he actually existed, right? But I see how he gravitated towards this story, and it is interesting. Also, sort of given us mentioning Tenet and Inception earlier, I feel like he was sort of trying to put his brand a little bit on it. And to me, that the device of the trial was in service to his sort of rhythmic editing flashback situation. I feel like there was maybe some choices made that were just because that's how he likes to do things, but it didn't always pay off as far as the narrative.
So this is getting back to that idea of auteurism,
yes,
though, right? It's,
yes,
a Christopher Nolan thing.
It's a Christopher Nolan film.
He totally...
Even a historical... like, yes, I agree.
It's got
that's
those aspects to it. And I will say, like, we don't have access to 70 millimeter screenings here, and we don't have an IMAX screen. Both of those I would have loved to have seen, but
yes,
even the way that it was, like, if you like movies and you enjoy seeing things in the big screen as we do, like, I'm super glad that I saw it in the movie theater. It looked great. I don't think I could watch this at home. I would have gotten bored.
Gosh,
I would have turned
yeah.
it off.
Yes.
I would have just been like, okay, I'm out.
I agree. It was important to see on the big screen.
Yeah.
And there were moments of what I consider sort of perfection in that those pieces of when we see the stomping on the bleachers and that sort of bright apocalyptic light that he used a couple of times that was sort of Oppenheimer's vision of the future and the chain reaction. Like, I really loved the way that was paced and shot. But one piece that just I cannot shake off is just when Oppenheimer is watching the crates with the bombs in them ride away slowly, and the like incredible dread. I have chills right now just talking about it. That has like really haunted me since, and that's effective filmmaking to me. There were moments of such grace like that where it's like he really captured the weight and dread of what is literal apocalyptic storytelling. Yeah.
The excision of science from the process,
yes,
once it had been made. Like, they're just out. Like,
yes.
Great.
You can't
we
come.
Your
yes.
opinion, but we don't want it anymore.
Exactly.
You're not involved in
yes.
this. So let me ask you this before we move on to Barbie. Do you feel that you have a better understanding of who Oppenheimer was than you did before you saw this film?
I do. Even though I'd like a lot more, I am going to read that book. I do feel like I care now about who he was and what he did, and even how he grew up and what brought him to this place. Because I do think what an extraordinary person to talk about. Yeah. So how about yourself?
Well, that's not knowing more about him, that's
right.
wanting to know
well, that's
more
true.
About him.
That's true. But I knew so little before, and so I do feel like I got enough pieces to make me do some more homework.
Okay.
So I do feel like he did paint a picture that was incomplete, yes, but intriguing enough and I think internal enough. That's what I feel like. We are seeing him think a lot and seeing him chew on things. And that really made me invest in this person who existed and invented. I don't always feel that way. Sometimes I just leave it at the information, but I want to know about his life more now. But how about yourself? What did you feel like you know anymore?
I don't.
You don't?
I
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't. Know that I wasn't necessarily inspired to learn more
yeah.
about him. I feel like there was a knowledge, a foreknowledge that would have been really useful that I didn't have, although you shouldn't be required to read a book before you see
True.
A movie. There are different forms. The movie should be able to tell that story. But there was so much reliance on the facial expressions of Cillian Murphy,
yeah.
but not having read the book and not knowing necessarily what was going on at any given time,
yeah.
the as much as it was to watch him act, he's a great actor, like
yes.
they didn't necessarily tell me what I think
yeah.
was thought to be being told, right? Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
I didn't get the
well
information
yeah.
from it that I wanted to. And so for me, I guess my ultimate takeaway from this movie was frustration.
Yeah.
I saw so much in there and so much possibility, and it just didn't come together for me because there's not a weak performance in the film.
No.
Like, everybody,
it's really strong.
There's weak parts, but that's different, right?
That's different.
Even the people who don't have a lot to do the most with what it is that they have
yes.
to do. So I was pretty frustrated by it. And I don't know what would make it better. I don't think anything could make the Trinity sequence better, right?
But, no, that was perfect in my mind, especially the quietness of it. I just was so moved by that choice of just like heartbeat and just everything cutting out. How would you, it's so arresting, right? I can't think of a better choice, and that part is gorgeous. So
it's funny you should say that, because that was my favorite part of the film, was the silent part. Like the moment where the bomb goes off and you just don't hear anything for what seems like an eternity. I don't know how long it is, but it was just so powerful, and maybe made more powerful by how obviously excellent the sound design was elsewhere. Like you don't normally notice sound design.
No.
Right?
No.
It's always present, of course.
It's true.
I'm watching this and like, this film's amazing. Like the sound is amazing in this movie.
And and the explosion was a jump scare, which is all, even though we are watching it happen, the delay of that was so alarming and perfect as far as that timing goes. And I love that we see the different positions that the team decides to witness this with and through the sun block, right? And the laying on the ground for Matt Damon. And to me, that was more storytelling too than a lot of the dialogue. It's interesting to me how effective just the pantomime of all of that and the different styles based on whether they were military men, whether they were academics. Something was really moving about that as well, where it's like, we'll all be in a different space when it hits, right? Like there was something so touching and moving about that. And then again, internal, where I think we, with that silence, we think about what everyone's thinking about, which I just think is really, really brilliant. So
I quite like that too. And it was also like, I did like the idea of a time and place where people of different political persuasions could put aside their differences and for a common cause. And obviously it wasn't all
roses.
Fair enough. There were people that didn't necessarily love what was going on, but it was just, it seems like in America that is just, not only does it not exist anymore, that it's impossible.
Yes.
And I did kind of enjoy that as well. And it's kind of funny that it's a Brit that kind of put that.
It is funny. It's perfect. That's so funny you would say that, because I had a similar statement when I saw enough hashtag FJB flags on the way to Tri-Cities this past weekend. I said a similar thing to my husband in that the respect that the parties show in glimpses in that movie, that there was at least a little bit of dignity and decorum, as opposed to the overall like mudslinging stupidity of the current
climate. Until the end, right?
Yes, that's true. There's plenty of that. P.S. Gary Oldman, once again, so perfect. He is one of my favorite actors, and he looked like he was having the best time of anyone.
Have you watched Snow Horses on Apple Plus?
No.
He's so great. He's so good. Really worth watching.
The way no one can say crybaby better than him, with more verve and expression. I thought he was such a perfect choice among many great actors. I was like, thank God Gary Oldman's here.
So let me just say one more thing about this film, one more observation. I'm shocked that it's doing as well as it's doing. And I'm interested to see how what kind of legs it has. And I'm not shocked. I'm shocked that it's doing well because of the kind of movie it is. It's really unusual. It's hard to think of an antecedent where there's like an art film basically that's making this, and it's like a big budget art film, obviously, but
for
that
sure.
so many people film. Are going to see and kind of bring it around to where we start. Like the draw is Nolan.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Just, like, I don't know that I'm sorry, but respect to Oppenheimer, I don't think I would have watched it if I don't know if it wasn't a director I liked.
And there's so like the power of a director to dictate box office is so limited. So even if it's like Wes Anderson or Paul Thomas Anderson. Like they are definitely directors who people go see their films because they're directing them.
That's right.
Not in these kind of numbers. Like not in these kind of numbers. Even Tarantino with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like I think it's miraculous that that film made almost $400 million.
That's wild. World.
It is. But it also had Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes. He is the draw. Right? Yes,
he is. Sure. Although Tarantino is like people go see Tarantino films. It's event filmmaking. So I'm astounded that this movie is doing as well as it is.
I wonder what Tenet
would have made were it released not during.
I wonder too. It was, sorry, but such as, yes. I'm sure it would have for the like raging mess that it was.
I'm like, great, right?
It looked gorgeous. Yeah, gorgeous, amazing. Great cast, but like sort of laid low by the bizarre, messy script of it. But yeah, so definitely improve. I do wonder how it would have done. You're right, in theaters. And I am surprised because this, because of the story itself, I'm happy that it's doing as well as it is, but I agree with you because it is kind of like homework still, and it's not always like that historical drama piece of it, and the biography is not always like a super huge thing. Even when a big director does it, I'm impressed with how well it's doing, but it's an anomaly, it feels like, too.
I don't think it means anything.
Fair enough.
For cinema.
Yeah.
People are coming back, but they're literally coming back for these two movies.
Yes.
They're not coming back to the cinema because cinema is back.
Yes, because cinema is awesome.
Dead Reckoning, which is a really good movie, but fun to watch and exciting that people aren't going to see. And then part of it's because it came out, you know, the weekend before these two movies. It's not great marketing. So with that in mind, let's move on to Barbie and talk about that. So we move from the dark to the light. And,
I love it.
And
will you kick us off this time? I would love to. Thank you for letting me go first.
Sure.
Yeah, you go.
I loved it. I don't know what else to say. It was great. It was fun. It was funny. It was beautifully acted. Yeah. It was incredibly well written. The characters were well developed. Yes. I think it's kind of amazing that I found Barbie, which is, like, to be blunt, it's a Mattel IP movie that is designed to sell Barbies.
Yes.
Like, let's not forget that.
No,
like,
it's a plastic commerce situation.
It is, it's a feminist treatise, but that's not, it's like, Mattel doesn't give a shit.
Mattel
cares that people are going, like, it's rehabilitated Barbie's image commercially. But I'm just kind of, like, flabbergasted that I was more intellectually engaged with Barbie than it was Oppenheimer. Like, significantly more.
I know. I agree. That's amazing. No, I love that. I had the best time. I thought it was so funny and smart. The script is genius. And yes, beautifully acted. I do feel like Ryan Gosling really, really stole so many scenes. He was extraordinary. I kind of, as funny as it might like sound to say as the character of Ken, I kind of can't picture anyone doing what he did with it. It was like as sort of generic as he's supposed to be. It was so individually brilliant and triumphant. I loved it was gorgeous, gorgeous to look at. I thought it was so incredible the way they As I often enjoy with movies where you have to travel to a different world or you wake up in reality or the Wizard of Oz sort of effect of it, I thought those sequences were so specifically smart and moving. The way that Margot Robbie acts that moment early on when they arrive in the real world, when she's just watching humans be human and laugh and fight and exist, I thought that was such a stunning moment, beautifully acted, beautifully shot. And I don't know, that was such there were so many moments like that where it was like this realness that was surprising and exciting. And Ken's journey is so freaking funny and amazing. His discovery of the patriarchy is pretty ingenious.
Which is, it turns out, the patriarchy is not about horses.
Oh, God, I love that. I love how stoked he is. And can I, okay, so just related to Ken's journey, I've been floating this inquiry to of my friends and family. Do you feel like, so I feel like when you start to think about the very interesting concept of this analog, that for each doll, a person is working out their processing their sort of, you know, games and mental, I don't know what you'd call it, what America Ferrera is going through, but their worries, their hopes and dreams through the dolls. Who's working Ken in your mind? are the Kens also being play acted by a particular set of kids or people? Like, is that your read? Who's working them?
That's a great question, Kenda. I hadn't thought of it, but since you put me on the spot, I would probably say that it would be Will Ferrell and the people that work for him. Yes. And I would also argue no lesson learned.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that it's more of the same, very hilariously, yes, juvenile in the funniest sort of kid way, the way that they're play acting at being a grown up. Brewski Bears, right? And that dumb Matchbox 20 song. So perfect. One of my very favorite choices among many. Because I asked that because I started to wonder if Ken also belonged to America's character, and her perception of her husband, who we see as a little bit sort of dopey but well-meaning, is that her Ken and Barbie, and this is what she's sort of working out given her perception of the world, right? Like, I don't know. I just started to like obsess over who is working who, you know.
So don't you think, I thought it was fascinating that her husband is somehow other.
Yes, like he's very not other.
A part of the of the male world that we otherwise are presented within this. So I thought the main character of the film, though, was America Ferrera. I didn't think it was Barbie. Like, she's
not right,
just a doll, even though she has like the realizations, etc. But like, America Ferrera, when she gave her monologue, there were literally women in the audience weeping.
Oh,
like, it was beautiful. Just like, yeah, including Annie, my wife, was like very like, and Tallulah, my daughter, was not, but it's the difference between somebody in their late 40s and their late teens, right? It's the different experientially.
That's right.
And I just thought it was so moving and so powerful. Mm. And it doesn't speak to my experience specifically because I'm a man, right? But it allowed me this really powerful insight, the way that it was put, to see and, you know, think like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have explained The Godfather at that time, right? Just like, but it really made me think. It made me think about things I've done and things I've said, and like, just to see it so raw and so real from another perspective. Obviously, not everybody's going to be open to that.
Sure,
there are people that are going to be, and it's that's not its purpose, right? Its purpose is not to change men or anything. Like, the purpose is just to like lay bare these horrible things that happen as almost incidental part of daily life. I just thought it was incredibly, incredibly powerful and one of the best moments in cinema that I've ever seen.
It was just beautifully written and beautifully delivered too. No, I think that felt, there were several sort of universal points. And I loved that, and that she explained that and sort of continues to say it in different ways when they're bursting the various Barbies out of their hypnosis in the Kendom, right? Like, I thought that was great too, that it was a great speech that continues in short spurts. And to me, that was a really smart way to get through to, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and she was really interested. She wasn't touched the same way, but she was really opened up by that. She was really amazed at that speech and was also like, yeah, is that what it's like? You know, we had a lot of really great follow-up conversations in our household about what it all meant. And for a Mattel movie to do that, to be the larger conversation piece after a Barbenheimer weekend, was its own kind of triumph. Like, there was a lot of chewing on the ideas of the Barbie movie. How incredible is that? That it really was so much food for thought is such a victory as far as Greta Gerwig is concerned, and her and Noah's writing symbiosis is so genius. I think that's exciting too, that it, right, because it was written by the both of them, the script is, yes, by them as a team. I was expecting, because I love the script, don't get me wrong, but I was waiting for a redeemable male character because of that. I was expecting a little bit of symbiosis within Barbie land, but I understand that it's supposed to be this inverse, right, of the world as we've lived it. But it was an interesting choice to me to make the executive team of men as dopey as they were, to make Ferrera's husband as goofy as he was. But was that at all like offensive or minimizing to you as a man? Like, was that weird at all? Okay.
Not even a little bit. Okay. Are you kidding me? I work at a liberal arts college.
Yeah.
No.
You were very high-minded about all of that, and I appreciate that.
No, I thought it was great, but there are a lot of people that are offended by it.
Yeah, there really are. I'm surprisingly so.
It's a particular kind of Fox News sort. Like, and I obviously don't agree with their point, but I get it. They're attacked. Like, Barbie's right. A Fox News, like stereotypical Barbie. Stereotypical, yes. Barbie is any one of those blonde newscasters.
That's right.
On Fox, like interchangeable blonde newscasters.
Yes.
On Fox News. So exactly. I'm sure that they would be offended by it. I get tired of people complaining about the movie they wish was made, mm-hmm, rather than the movie that was made.
Sure.
I've had people say, heard people say it had nothing to do with family values or et cetera. And it's like, well, that's not the movie they wanted to make. That's
no.
Like, criticize what they did make if you want to, but like, don't criticize what they didn't do.
I agree with you, because there is so much of that, what should have been, could have been. I do love the choice in a way. I feel like the easier answer that is addressed when the middle school, you know, quartet of girls is saying, to kind of attacking Barbie and saying, you know, make us feel bad, and you're the fascist, right? I think one of them calls her fascist at some point. I think that's so, I love that they speak to that, but that wasn't the focal point. Because to me, that's the easy critique. That's the easy answer. I like that it went another direction. I love that Ken's involved. I just thought the choices were smart, surprising, interesting, and well carried out. And I guess I don't subscribe to the fact that it should have been more about Barbie and how bad she made everyone feel, because I can't speak to everyone's experience. I know that that was an experience. That is really never how I feel like my friends and I, as little kids, sort of perceive Barbie and dolls in general. It was an incredible container and vehicle for working out your stuff. And to me, it's so genius that they really spoke to that this sort of transcendent quality of what dolls mean is really, really smart and elevated thinking compared to what I feel like was the expected feminist text, right? Of just stopping at self-esteem, body image, impossible beauty standards, which is important. I'm not trying to minimize that, but I really appreciate that it got more complex than that even.
They almost didn't touch beauty standards.
Like, right. And I think
those
were
really
smart.
They had diverse bodies, right? Of all sizes. Yeah. They kind of dressed it positively.
Speaking of which, weird Barbie, stroke of genius, maybe my favorite thing about the whole movie, because I feel like so many of us had in our households a weird Barbie. There's a weird Barbie even in the Foundry, a giant weird Barbie that was from a Jim Dine sculpture 15 years ago, but everyone tried to cut their doll's hair, and Kate McKinnon was the perfect embodiment of that Barbie that's been played with too much. I just love that they repeated that description too. That was, and is like perpetually in the splits, right? And has this strange house on the hill. I loved that the wizard that you go to, or the strange eccentric outcast person, is weird Barbie in Barbie Land. I loved that so much. It was part of that complexity that made it such a spectacular movie.
And Kate McKinnon was perfect,
she was
in it.
Ingenious. You know, she was so good.
Sitting here thinking on the fly, Kendall, let's go back just briefly to your asking about, like, is there a parallel character to Ryan Gosling? Maybe it was Michael Cera's.
Maybe, yes, maybe so. Alan, I love Alan.
Yes. He doesn't seem to buy into the BS.
No,
right?
He doesn't. He's questioning. He wants to leave Barbie Land, right? Yeah. He wants out. I love that. That's really interesting, because that's right. Because is he based on a true? I didn't see him in the lineup at the end, but
I have no idea. But apparently, like a lot of these things, apparently there was like a pregnant Barbie, and like,
yes,
I
and
had
sugar
no
daddy
idea.
Barbie,
yeah,
Ken,
and Barbie whose boobs grew. Like, I had no idea that these things existed.
No, it's wild. It's wild and so strange as far as that marketing standpoint. That's what I did love about the pitch at the end of, like, you know, ordinary Barbie and all that, and how Will Ferrell's like, it's a terrible idea until someone says it's going to make money. Like, I really love that those pieces got in there and that Mattel signed off on that. It's an impressive dance that they were doing throughout. And I was really trying to, like, pay attention to the moments that I feel like they had to argue for or against, or that Mattel would have been perhaps hung up on and had to be massaged at all. Cause I'm so impressed it got through, right? If that makes sense. Cause it's kind of a miraculous in a way that a toy movie, but I also thought the Lego movie was a revelation. So to me, it's closer to the spectacular sort of big existential questions that those movies also approach. But Barbie is even more unexpected in my mind as far as getting these pieces of brilliance through.
So let me throw a little salt into the wound here.
Do
just
it.
A little bit.
Okay, let me hear it. Yeah.
I wish that Greta Gerwig wasn't making Barbie movies. Like, I say that with some hesitation, because it was an incredible movie.
It was so good. Yeah.
But there is a cynical element of it, and not her. Like,
right.
I congratulate her. She is getting 100 million plus budgets. She's
amazing.
Getting an advertising budget that supposedly was in excess of $150 million. I mean, she is playing with the big boys, and I mean boys.
Yeah.
Right? She's
so boys. Yeah.
The only woman right now, and she's only done it once, but she's making these just a huge, high dollar IP film that killed it. And it's like, we should have more than one woman that's doing this, right?
Yes.
So she is literally leading the pack, although one thinks of Chloe Zhao and the failure of Eternals, right? Had that movie killed it, she would have been making another one. But it didn't, right?
Yeah.
In the old adage was, in Hollywood, you can fail upwards, which is true, unless you're a woman, right? Then you don't get to fail.
That's right. You don't get once. Yeah.
So more power to her. And that she was able to make the movie that she made is great. Mattel is, you know, they're trying to show, they want to monetize everything that they make. That's what they want to do. And they see this as their opening salvo, and we are open for business. And if you're a high-end filmmaker, you can come put your stamp on whatever it is that you want to make, as long as our product is in it. And I don't think they care at all about any criticism of Barbie. They're just thrilled that people want to see it, etc. They're thrilled. And, like,
yes,
it's very hard to get your small art movie made, even if you're Greta Gerwig.
Like, right.
It's very difficult. So more power to her. Sure. That said, do I like Lady Bird or Barbie better? As much as I like Barbie, I like Lady Bird better. I think I like Little Women better too.
Oh, me too. But I do too. And I've been struggling. I am happy for her success too, but I'm a little crushed that Mattel gets to be attached, that things are sold from this, that to me it flies in the face of the spirit of what she does, even though I know it, yes, that it's an extraordinary thing that happened here with the source material, right? Which it's a bizarre, interesting phenomenon. But yeah, you're right. Mattel just wants their name in the papers. Really, it's the whiff of greed, not from Gerwig, but from the brand name that's attached, is I guess I bristle a little bit when I read the articles that are talking about how this sort of benefits commerce. I want it to benefit the filmmaker, and I want her to get the gigs she wants because of this. But just because of the brand attached, there's a selling out quality that is not hers. I'm not blaming the filmmaker, but it is tough. Like I'm a little bit torn when I read about it, because I'm like, ugh, this is so big.
So if we go back to the 70s, there was one time there was this idea of one for you and one for them.
Right? Yeah.
You would make this commercial film, and then in turn you'd make your smaller, more personal film.
Totally.
And you'd alternate back and forth. And that has been obliterated long ago, if it ever even really was a thing.
Was it ever possible, really? Yeah.
But people thought it was. And
fair enough.
To do it.
Yeah.
And her next two projects are making Narnia films for Netflix.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll be fine, but it's just oh gosh, the promise of Lady Bird,
yes.
And how fresh,
yes,
and original and amazing and different it was, and to see that energy put into IP, even if it's great IP, it's still
right.
It's frustrating. Yeah. And I can say the same about Noah Baumbach, right?
Yeah.
I want to see Kicking and Screaming.
Yes.
I want to see Marriage Story. I thought it was incredible.
It's
so well written. And, he'll write stuff still occasionally with Wes Anderson, which I hopefully he'll do that again.
That's a pretty great team.
Yeah.
Did you see White Noise? Did you watch it?
I did not see
White Noise. I thought it was so, so excellent. And they're a powerful, interesting couple, both of them. I love what they're doing and trying to do, but that was my thought too, was like, I hope the Barbie movie buys Greta Gerwig 10 Lady Birds. I don't love hearing the Netflix like Narnia thing, because to me it was like, oh wow, so she's like set to do like her next art film creative project. Like I almost picture sort of the the opposite of the hugeness of the Barbie movie. I picture something that is like this pet project. So I do hope that's coming. I don't want it to, I guess, change them, which I don't think it will, but to be clear. But the bigness of this is a double-edged sword kind of feeling every time I learn some numbers, the money that's being made. But I do want that to fuel the artistry, I suppose, and the creative freedom that I hope is enjoyed sort of away from something like a mega company like Mattel. So yeah, it's a little bit, it's a really strange feeling, right? Of like, wow, like I was really blown away by the triumph of Barbie, but I really hope that more art comes from the funding of it. Yeah.
And it's also kind of sad, because I think those kind of the Lady Bird or Kicking and Screaming, right? Noah Baumbach style movies, Margot at the Wedding, whatever you want to call it. The style of those smaller art films being released theatrically, it's just not going to keep happening. It's just not. It's going to be increasingly rare, and it's going to be the higher dollar IP. But it seemed for a while that the home for those kind of movies would be streaming networks. And now even that is, as they've cut back on production and they're more interested in recognizable IP, I just don't know where those films are going to be seen.
Fair enough. And I know. Yeah, it's shrinking a little bit.
It's troubling.
It is. I just a tiny bonus question. Did you watch They Cloned Tyrone? Just thinking.
No, I know of it, but I have not watched it. And is that Boots Riley?
It's Jewel Taylor, who's a newer film, younger filmmaker. But no, it's actually, I thought it was Boots Riley, and I also thought it was the filmmaker whose name is escaping me, who did Attack the Block. I thought it was the same team. Oh, it's actually not. Rittenauer,
British, aren't they?
Yes, he is. And But Jewel Taylor, J-U-E-L. And it was a really interesting sort of evocative film that I actually was sort of inspired that Netflix had invested in, because it was a huge risk in some ways and not necessarily a perfect movie, but a great chance, I guess. I feel like they gave this young sort of unknown filmmaker. So to me, that felt like a little spark of hope. You talking about the sort of, the streaming services and the investment, right? And the risk that people are willing to take. Something was gratifying about the risk that film represented. So I recommend watching it. I thought it was really funny, really interesting as the metaphor goes, and incredibly acted. It's Jamie Foxx and John Boyega and Tayanda Harris from Mad Men and Chirac and stuff like that. And so anyway, it's just another independent filmmaking little plug that Netflix invested in. That was kind of heartening. So
I would love to see that. So
yeah, it's interesting.
Well, let me just end with this tidbit.
Please.
Let's not forget that the highest grossing film this year remains the Super Mario Brothers movie.
That is
which stunk on us. Like, it was so bad.
I hated it. Jack Black was the only good thing about the whole thing, and I was like embarrassed for
involvement. But yeah, that's what people want to see. Yeah, you can't knock it, right?
You
can knock it, but it's not gonna change.
I will.
It's not gonna change that people want to see it. And we'll see. Barbie may end up higher, but I don't know.
It's close to surpassing it, is what I read
already?
Yesterday. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that's kind of exciting. So it's like, well, it's clearly the better movie by 1,000, but
it's as good as an IP movie can be.
Yes, it really is.
Right.
And that in itself is such a like victory in my mind that something artful got through, thank goodness. But yeah, I hear what you're saying though, and I've been wondering about what the projects become now for that duo.
Well, now that I have a hard time believing when we come out of the strike that they're going to retool with small art films, right?
Yeah,
that's right. A whole other conversation we can have at a later day.
Nice.
Well, Kenna, thank you very much. So fun to talk about these two films. And
seriously.
And I'm glad that I got to see them both over the course of the weekend, as I told you, I actually saw three movies in 3 days.
Love it.
I couldn't do, I'm glad I didn't see both of them in one day. Though. That would have been way, way too much.
Too much. No, got to split it up a little.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I've been so looking forward to this conversation. I'm glad for the opportunity to unpack it all. Thank you, my friend.
Well, I'm Robert Sickles for Kenda Kiefel, and this is The Cold Open, number 49, the Summer Auteur Face-Off Edition.
Doesn't seem to matter what I do, I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. I have feelings that I can't explain, driving me insane. All my life been so